Jeff Sachs here, Web Yeshiva, Masechet Ta'anit. We are on Daf Yud Aleph Omud Beis, 11b. The Gemara reminds us of what the Mishnah had said way earlier, that Ochlim V'Shotin Mechashecha, that on the fast days that are decreed because of rain and other tragedies, those are what we call half-day fasts, but we're about to see maybe there ain't no such thing. Meaning, from the evening, you can eat. That it's a sunrise to sunset deal. Omar Rebbe Zeira, Omar Rav Huna, Yochid Shekibel Alav Ta'anit, Afilu Achal V'Shata Kol Halayla, L'Machar Hu Mitpalel Tfilat Ta'anit. We have this concept. If you pay attention in your siddur tomorrow at Mincha, you might even notice it, of Kabbalat Ta'anit. A person can accept upon himself a fast at any time, except for the days, of course, in which it's forbidden to fast. In addition to the set calendar date fasts, and in addition to fasts that the Chachamim would institute in times of drought or sorrow or trouble, that kind of fast is less known to us. Even though particular times of national distress, I think there was one of these about a year ago at the beginning of Corona. The Rabbanut HaRashit said that there should be a fast. I think on that occasion, it was a fast just until Chatzot HaYod. Does anybody remember? I don't remember.
I remember somebody pointed out like some sources that said Dafka, there was like in the Shulchan Aruch, it said in a time of plague, you shouldn't fast.
Well, that's the Gemara we learned last week, 2 weeks ago, whenever it was, about not fasting in times of plague. But I don't remember whether the fast that the Rabbanut had suggested last year was a fast just until Chatzot, or if it was a fast, you know, from sunrise to sunset. But those fasts are not fasts with a capital F. Those are, you know, recommended fasts. Obviously, someone who chooses not to fast is not doesn't have the same consequence as somebody who wouldn't fast, let's say, on Sarah B'Tevet or on Shavuos B'Tammuz. Even those amongst us who recognize the authority of the Rabbanut HaRashit, to say nothing of those who don't. So Omer Rav Huna, Omer Rabbi Zeira, Omer Rav Huna, Yochid Shekibel Alav Ta'anit, Afilu Achal V'Shata Kol HaLayla, L'Machar Hu Mitpalel Tefilat Ta'anit. So a person who accepts upon himself a fast, maybe you have a Yaret Zeit. Some people, unlike Shalom sent us a basket of goodies when he had Yaret Zeit. But some people who are a little less Hasidishly oriented than Shalom have a custom. There's such a custom to fast on Yaret Zeitz from sunrise to sunset. At Mincha, on the day before one takes upon himself a fast, there's a text to say in the Shemona Esrei for accepting upon yourself a fast for the next day. Now, right away, this should be curious. Why should you do it at Mincha the day before? You're not going to start fasting until the following morning. Wouldn't it be more logical to add in that declaration of your intention to fast at Maariv, which is the preceding prayer? No, it's done at Mincha the day before to declare that from the following morning, you'll be fasting. So when you take upon yourself a personal fast, that night, in the afternoon, you daven mincha, you say, tomorrow is going to be a fast. Sunset comes. Technically, after sunset, it already is the fast day, except you're allowed to eat and drink at night, and the fast only begins the next morning at Alot HaShachar. It's important to remember, the other morning, On Tanit Esther, I woke up early. When I was a kid, I used to do this. When I was younger, I used to set an alarm, for 20 minutes before Alot HaShachar, before dawn, to eat and drink something, because, when you're younger, it's a little harder to fast, to get a little more, you're a growing boy, you need your energy, whatever it is. I haven't done that in many, many, many years. The halacha is, this is parenthetical, the halacha is that on the night before a fast, when you go to sleep, the assumption is that you're not planning on waking up in the middle of the night to eat and drink. So the assumption is that when you go to sleep at night before the fast, you're accepting the fast upon yourself. And unless you make some kind of mental or verbal declaration that you're not accepting the fast upon yourself, if you wake up in the middle of the night to go to the bathrooms, whatever it is, Taki, you shouldn't eat or drink. You know, you can kind of make a blanket statement, I think, saying that it is my position, I never accept the fast upon myself early the night before. And if I wake up in the middle of the night, I can eat or drink. So I woke up the other morning on the Tanit Esther, whenever that was, last Thursday. And I thought it was still like the middle of the night. I thought it was like 2-3 in the morning. And I went to go grab, I have like a water bottle I keep next to my bed. And then I looked at the clock and I saw that it was already quite late. It was already like almost 6 a.m. Fast starts not at sunrise. This is a mistake that people make. I made the mistake. If you rewind the tape, you'll hear I made the mistake and said sunrise to sunset. That's not precise. Fasts do not begin at sunrise. They begin at dawn. Sunrise is the point where the sun were to pop up above the horizon if the world was a perfectly flat ball. When we see sunrise, it's usually quite, depending upon where you live, of course. If you live on the Jersey Shore, you see sunrise when it pops up literally above the horizon of the sea line. But we here in Eretz Yisrael, and certainly we in Efrat, well, I guess it depends on where you live, we don't see sunrise at astronomical sunrise because it's blocked. The sun, the sphere of the sun is hidden behind mountains or buildings or other things like that. Dawn is a period earlier when it starts getting light out, but before the sun rises above the horizon. So for halachic purposes, like fasting, the fast begins at dawn, not at sunrise. And if you look on the luach, you can see exactly what time alot hashachar, amud hashachar is. And that's when the fast begins. So Rav Huna said that when you accept upon yourself a fast, you can eat and drink all night long. And the next day at shacharit, you can be mitpalel tfilat ta'anit. You can recite the Aneinu prayer, which we add into the Amida. It happens, our custom is we do not add the Aneinu prayer at Shacharit. At Shacharit of a fast day, only the Chazan recites Aneinu in the repetition. At Mincha, everyone recites the Aneinu in the private Shemona Esrei, and it's repeated by the Chazan. It could be the Gemara. The times of the Gemara, there was a different practice. But the point here is that even though you ate and drank at night, in the morning, your fast is still on. So what does this tell us about the nature? What is the nature of the night before a fast? What are the different possibilities?
In what regard? Like in terms of the obligation to fast, to potentially start the night before?
In other words, is a fast day, forget Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, which are 24-hour fasts, all the other fasts, Shavuos B'Tammuz, Asar B'Tevet, the fasts that the Chachamim would decree in times of drought, or a private fast you have for Yahrzeit, which you accept upon yourself at Mincha, is it that the whole day, the whole 24-hour period, is a fast day, but you're allowed to eat at night? Or is the fast that period from dawn until Tzeit HaKochavim? L'mai nafkamina,
Parenthetically, I've heard of cases, let's say people who gotten married, let's say on
Oh.
the night before
Shavuot
Sarabat Tevet, yeah.
Yeah. So, in other words, the night before Shavuot, during the 3 weeks, well, here there's two aspects to it. Shavuot Sabbatamos is a fast day, but Shavuot Sabbatamos also initiates the 3 week period in which there's all types of prohibitions. The custom is not to shave, the custom is not to have weddings. So, when do the customs of the 3 weeks start? Do they start from the morning of Shavuot Sabbatamos when the fast starts? And the night before, or L'Shavuot Sabbatamos, you could have a wedding. You could shave. When do you have to stop shaving? You have to stop shaving the afternoon of the 16th of Tammuz, or that night of the 17th of Tammuz, a few hours before the fast starts, you could still be shaving according to the custom not to shave. Could you have a wedding that night? Or, in other words, that's in terms of the prohibitions of the 3 weeks. But altogether, on the night before Asara Batevet, could you have a wedding? Is it appropriate to have a wedding? In other words, if that night is, I mean, it obviously is the date. If you got married that night in your ketubah, it would say Asara Batevet, which, you know, people would like look on the wall and they would think that's a little strange. But is it appropriate to have a wedding that night? Is it technically on the clock? Are you in a period of ta'anit when it happens to be permitted to eat? Or does the whole thing only start from the next morning, and there'd really be no problem having a wedding the night before Asara Batevet or Shavuot Sabbatamos? So without jumping the gun, la halacha, the truth is Rav Moshe Feinstein was lenient b'shas adchak. He thought you could shave the night of the Shavuot Sabbatamos. He thought you could have weddings, that the prohibitions only really begin from the next morning. Rabbi Soloveitchik, however, was more machmir. Rabbi Soloveitchik, his opinion was that the whole day, the whole 24-hour period is the fast day. And in terms of Shavuot Sabbatamos, the customs of the 3 weeks begin at sunset the night before. The whole day is the fast day, but there's a heter achila. You're allowed to eat until the next morning. One of the Yahrzeit shiurim, Rabbi Soloveitchik has a Yahrzeit shiur in the shiurim lezecher Av Mori called Yom V'Laila, which deals with all the halachic aspects of when day begins and other things like that. And he discusses this. There. The Gemara goes on and says, "Lamachar lan betaanito, eino mitpalel shel taanit." Let's say you accept upon yourself a fast day at mincha. That night you eat and drink. Let's say Sunday afternoon, you say, "I'm going to have a fast day." Sunday night you eat and drink. Monday morning, you wake up, you skip the coffee, you don't eat or drink, you go to shul, you daven the tefillat ta'anit, mincha that day, you daven the tefillat ta'anit, but you know how it is on a fast day without the coffee, you sometimes get a headache, so you go to sleep on the afternoon of the fast day. And you sleep through to the next morning. That's what lan betanit means. Look at Rashi. Well, first look at Rashi. Rashi says shekibel alav ta'anit me'etmol. Right, the day before you accept the fast, and you say hare ani yoshev betanit lamachar. Tomorrow I'm going to be fasting. Afilu achal v'shata kol ha'layla ad amud ha'shachar lamachar hitpalel tefilat ta'anit anenu. Lan betanito, but if you sleep through the night after your fast until the next morning, ba'oto ta'anit shekibela lav shelo achal b'motzei ta'anito, Vilan kol oto halayla l'shem ta'anit ad haboker. So the next morning you wake up and you're still fasting. I mean, at this point already, you will have been fasting for more than 24 hours. So you wake up the next morning, you're still fasting, you go to shul. Should you say Aneinu again? Because technically, you're still fasting. So the Gemara says, or Rav Huna says, no, you don't say Aneinu again at the second day's Shacharit, even though you haven't eaten at all. Why? Eino yachol, Rashi says, Eino yachol itpalel Aneinu kodem shiochal. Kedei letzei didei chovat ta'anit shalayla. Afal pishu yom echad. Yidiktiv vayer vayvoker. Yom echad. L'kam en mefarish v'ozol mai kasava Rav Huna, mai ta'amo ein mitpala macharneinu. Later the Gemara will explain why you don't say it again. But it appears because there was no kabbalat ta'anit the day before, your fast ended at nightfall the previous night. You were Rip Van Winkle fast asleep. But without the active declaration of the Kabbalat Ta'anit, the Ta'anit ended, even though you haven't eaten. There's a difference between fasting and not eating.
If there was a situation where somebody would want to accept upon themselves more than one day of a fast, I don't know, like kind of like Esther and the Megillah.
Yeah.
So would they, if they said, I'm accepting upon myself 2 days of fast, l'chadchila, would they then be able to say it on the second day?
That's exactly what the Rishonim here discuss in terms of this Gemara. It seems that Rav Huna thinks, at least according to Rashi, no, you'd have to have a declaration of the fast for the next day. Omar of Yosef, Makasava Rav Huna, Savira le ein mitanin l'sha'ot. Does Rav Huna think that there's no such thing as fasting for a few hours? This concept of ta'anit l'sha'ot, right? The idea that you could have, and as we think of, there's two types of fasts, the 24-hour Yom Kippur style fast, or the dawn to dusk fast. So maybe there's something else. Maybe there's a fast for 2 hours. Maybe you could have a 1 hour fast. So does Rav Huna think that you can't do that? And it's this guy that woke up the second morning and he still hadn't eaten anything. Of course, he was asleep from the end of one fast until the next morning. So he goes to shul for Shacharit. Obviously, he's not going to fast for 48 hours. There is such an idea on Yom Kippur of having 2 days of Yom Kippur. I mean, Lamaisa, there were people in Shanghai, you know, after the war, when the Amir Yeshiva got to Shanghai, and there were questions about the international date line, and it was unclear what day was Shabbat, what day was anything. So there were people, presumably only the young and fit and machmir, who fasted for 48 hours.
People in Japan.
But now these questions have been more or less resolved. There's nobody that really...
I don't know. According to the talk of the Chazon Ish, it would be so big and they wouldn't need to do it.
I don't think that people do that.
I remember reading was a tshuva of Rav Kasher, who was actually, I thought it was very interesting. He said that, because people asked him also, and he was the one who said, look, we can just hold by the international deadline. You don't need to come up with a particular Jewish approach. And he said that people are keeping two Shabbatot. And he said that actually you think you're being machmir, but you're actually being, you know, kolomosif goreah, because the purpose of Shabbat is to remember that God created the world in 6 days. If you, on a regular basis, keep Shabbat, 2 days of Shabbat, then you're making it as if God created the world in 5 days. It's not the week that he created. And so it's not actually the right way to approach it.
Bivadai. But it's all these questions of the international date line, et cetera. So in the end, I think that they've been all resolved in the sense that people who find themselves in these places, you know, they there's a position on what to do, and they don't keep 2 days out of safek. And there's also questions, there's related questions about the northern latitudes. Like if you go places where, you know, like the white nights in the summer where the sun doesn't set. So like how, you know, this is a problem for like halakha. Because we live in a world where, you know, like a lot is dependent upon the sun rising and the sun setting and the passage of time. In the 60s, there it was popular to write about, you know, like during the space race, about, you know, mitzvot on the moon. I mean, Rav Kasher also wrote on this topic. You know, keeping Shabbat in space when you become untethered from terrestrial time and the passage of time. And etc. This was revisited again when Ilan Ramon went into space, Zichron Olavracha, because even though Ilan Ramon was not Shomer Shabbat, he was certainly the most traditional of all people to have, left the phrase?
Terrestrial plane.
Left the terrestrial plane.
I mean, I think it's also relevant to something we talked about a few weeks ago about the issue of. We talked about the you know, when we'd say, I don't know if it was Hentel Matar or Marina Tal, but like in the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas we like to think that the Torah is relevant in all places and all situations. But, you know, the Torah was also, you know, meant for us to live in Eretz Yisrael to the point that, like, these are not ideal situations. We should probably be living in a place that the Torah was meant to be kept and we'll be able to keep it in an ideal way. That, you know, we're...
Yeah, Nachinami, but Chazal did not know. Chazal did not know about the idea of the international dateline. And Chazal did not, I mean, obviously Hashem knew these things because he created the world and he understood how it worked. But Chazal didn't know about the international dateline. Chazal had a concept of, it's a Gemara we learned together years ago in Masechet Shabbat about somebody who gets like lost in the desert or lost in the wilderness and has lost track of time. You know, Robinson Crusoe. I remember Robinson Crusoe, like part of what he did was it was essential that he kept track of time. You know, this idea of like, you know, like it's a trope in all the comic strips of like the prisoner in the dungeon marking off, you know, with a piece of coal or a stick on the wall, how many days, you know, keeping tally of how many days, because otherwise you just completely lose track of time. We know this from experiments of people that are in isolation or in solitary confinement. People completely lose track of time and the passage of time. So Robinson Crusoe is marking off. That's how he knows that Friday, you know, his trusty man servant arrives, is named Friday because he arrives on a Friday, because Crusoe was still keeping track of time. Maybe he was keeping track of time because of the Christian Sabbath. He wanted to know what day was Sunday. So the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat is concerned, somebody who loses track of time in the wilderness, what does he do about Shabbat? So either every day is Safek Shabbat. I don't know what day today is. There's a 1 in 7 chance that it's Shabbat. So really, if it's a Safek Shabbat, then Shabbat is a very serious Torah obligation. So then we say a safek de'araita l'chumra. I should treat every day as if it's Shabbat. So the Gemara is aware that that's a death sentence. Because if you treat every day as if it's safek Shabbat, you're never going to get out of the desert. You will die in the desert. Because if you say, well, I can't travel today because it might be Shabbat. So the Gemara suggests you count 6 days, and on the seventh day you observe Shabbat. And when you get back to civilization, you either were right, there's a 1 in 7 chance that you were right, and if you were wrong, so then you just adjust your calendar to the calendar of reality. So that's the only sugya in Shas that's in any way parallel in all of these discussions about international dateline and about mitzvot on the moon and about the northern and southern extremities of latitude. That's the only real relevant like the question, like, what do? You go on these Alaska cruises in the summer. So they're post-gibbon, they'll tell you, don't go there, right? You shouldn't put yourself in that position. You go a different time of year when you don't have to deal with that. But David Poskin's otherwise. Okay, let's go on. So Kasava Ravuna Svirale ain mitanin l'sha'ot. Odilma mitanin l'sha'ot. Is there such a thing as a partial day fast or a fast for a few hours? V'hamitane l'sha'ot einu mitpalel tefila ta'anit. Now, Rav Huna thinks that that there is no such thing as a ta'anit l'sha'ot? There is such a thing as a ta'anit l'sha'ot, but a ta'anit l'sha'ot does not say the anenu prayer. So as the next morning, the fellow wakes up. Obviously, he's not going to fast. This is how I got off track by talking about the weird yeshiva in Shanghai. The next morning, a person wakes up and he realizes, oi, you know, I'm still fasting, right? I haven't eaten anything yet, even though the fast was over many hours ago. So I'm already into my second day of fasting. So should he say Anenu at Shacharit? And then after Shacharit, he'll go home and have breakfast and break his fast, because nobody expects he's going to fast a whole nother day. So either Rav Huna says, there's no such thing as a Ta'anit L'Sha'ot. There's no such thing as a part day fast. The fact that he hasn't eaten does not ipso facto mean that he is still fasting with a capital F. Or does he think, no, there is such a thing as a part-time, a ta'anit l'sha'ot. But when you're in the midst of a ta'anit, you do not say anenu, the anenu prayer. The anenu prayer is reserved for a full proper fast of dawn to dusk. This fellow is taka fasting, right? A few hours, but a few hour fast does not obligate you to say, or does not allow you to say, the anenu. So
this is actually, I remember this is relevant. When I was living in kibbutz, there were people who would they would fast in the morning, they would daven early mincha, and then they would go to eat. So yeah. I guess you're saying that if they knew mirosh that they weren't planning on completing the fast, and they probably shouldn't have said, at least going this approach, they shouldn't have said anenu at all if they had eating right after.
That might be different, because those fasts are the instituted fasts on the calendar. Shavuos Batamas, Asar Bateves, Tanis Esther, etc. Here we're talking about somebody who accepts upon himself an optional fast, right? So in other words, on the calendar, by the way, this, we saw it last week, there's even an opinion, if I'm not fasting because of health reasons, not because of Purish Menat Zibur, if I'm not fasting because of health reasons, there's an opinion, we saw in the Shulchan Aruch, that you say Anenu anyway. Because I have a Pur. I'm exempt from fasting because of health reasons. But today is Shavuos Batamuz. Today is a Asarah Bateves. Today is a day of national Inui. And therefore I should recite Anenu because of a recognition of the calendar. Right? It depends of my fasting or not. Right? But here we're talking about private fasting. There's a person can transform a day into a private fast day. The question is, can a person transform a part of that day into a private fast day?
If we define a fast as being either dawn to dusk or the 25-hour fast, so the thing about Sha'ot, I mean, you could say, you know, I'm taking upon myself not to eat until 10 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. But it's not a fast.
Oh, what is it?
It's just he took upon himself.
What do we get in hello language? What do we call that?
I don't know.
Well, a neder.
A neder, okay.
You can make it. So that's exactly the nafkamina here. When a person takes a ta'anit sha'ot, is it a ta'anit or is it a neder? A person can take a neder. A person can say, I'm not going to drink milk. A person can take on a neder and say, I'm not going to drink milk until noon. A person can take out a neder, I'm not going to eat or drink anything at all. But does that neder, and you know, that we learned the derm, didn't we? Did learn the derm. We learned the derm 3 years ago. We learned the derm, right? The derm are serious things. It's a vow. It's a person takes upon himself, usually about religious matters. And a person who violates his neder has violated an issur midiraisa. Not that. If I say right now, I make a we were doing. My wife and I were doing not for religious reasons. You know, there's this thing. It's quite fashionable now. These, what do you call it? Intermittent fasting, which basically means don't eat at night and skip breakfast, right? Like you shouldn't eat. You know, like after 7 or 8 o'clock at night, you shouldn't eat anything, and you should try to go the next day until, you know, like 10 or 11. If you Google it, you'll find no end of it. It's helpful because, you know, like if at 11, 12 o'clock at night, you're noshing around, that food sits on your stomach. It doesn't get digested very well. We were doing, I've already fallen off the wagon, but that's not a neder, right? That's just something we were trying to do for healthy reasons. But a nachinami, if I had said, You can understand that somebody trying to stick to a diet or somebody trying to kick a bad habit can take a neder. And if you live in a world where nedarim have force, if you live in a world where adding that religious obligation adds force to your commitment not to hit the bottle, not to light the cigarette, etc., not to eat after a certain hour. Right. So then you're adding, you're transforming your personal health practice into a matter of religious concern. And it might be that having done that, knowing that violating the neder now carries, you know, spiritual peril, that might give you a little more incentive to stick with the program. But that's not fasting. Right. In other words, not eating between this hour and that hour might not be defined as fasting. It might just be a neder.
Jeff, the example that you brought up at the beginning of Shir, of I think the Rabbanut instituting a half day fast, mamash half day fast, yom. This is because it's rabbinically instituted. It's an
actual. Again, those customs, where they tell people we're going to fast, we're going to say Tehillim, and we're going to do other things like that, that's to encourage tshuva and introspection. But it might not have the halachic status of a ta'anit with a capital T. Or you can say that, no, it's a ta'anit sh'ot. And they didn't want to make, in our day, they didn't want to make a whole day fast because that's hard for people, etc. So they said, you know, basically skip breakfast and say some Tehillim. But enachinami, if people had taken upon themselves to fast at the beginning of Corona, and not just the chatzot, you could not wait until Mincha Gadola, and at Mincha Gadola you would take out a Sefer Torah, right? If 10 people accept upon themselves a fast and they're davening together, they should take out a Sefer Torah and read the Kriya for Tanit Sibur and the Haftarah, and they should say Aneinu, right? We had a case a number of years ago when we were still in the caravan, where thankfully I was not present that year, but on Simchas Torah, a Sefer Torah fell. So, you know, there's a custom some people have, if a Sefer Torah falls, that you fast for 40 days, you fast a long time. This is a kind of folk custom which is observed in the breach. In reality, very few people actually do this if they're in the presence of a Sefer Torah. In 1999, if you go into the archives of tradition, traditiononline.org, there's an article by Daniel Feldman about this minhag of fasting for a fallen Sefer Torah. But when it happened in the caravan, Rabbi Riskin suggested that people that were present, they should fast. There should be a one-day fast. And so people that were present, I don't know if everybody did, but you know, quite a few of the people that were there for that Simchas Torah, they chose a Monday or a Thursday after Yontif, and they fasted, and at Mincha they took out the Sefer Torah and they leant, because that's what you're supposed to do. It transforms the day into a fast. So this idea of fasting, the Rabbanut's idea, either it was just to encourage tshuva, and it wasn't a proper fast, and certainly since it was completely optional, it didn't have that force, but it may have been. It may have had the din of this Ta'anit Sha'ot, if there is such a thing as Ta'anit Sha'ot, which is the question the Gemara is trying to resolve.
Can we go back? This fellow that fasts on the yard site.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, theoretically, you know, so the mincha before, he says he's going to fast the next day. And it could be a situation where he can't fast. He's sick, he can't fast. But he still
If it's an onus case, so you're potter.
I'm upset, but what if he still daven the tefillah of a fast day?
No, I don't think so. I don't think, because we don't pask in that way. We don't pask in that way on Shavuos Batamas and Asar Batevet. So certainly not on a private fast. I mentioned the Shulchan Aruch mentions that idea. It's not the Halacha L'maisa. Right? Halacha L'maisa, if you've broken your fast, you know, for whatever reason, and there are plenty of people, you know, who have legitimate excuses to not fast on the minor fast days. You know, it's a machlokas, like pregnant and nursing women. It's a machlokas between the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan, with pregnant and nursing women. You know, now, you know, physicians will tell you, basically, a pregnant woman should never fast. You know, until it's very bad for the fetus, you know, until the very end of the pregnancy, at which point it doesn't really matter. But it's physicians will always tell you that a pregnant or nursing woman should never fast. All things being equal, so there's a machlokas between the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan, whether a pregnant or nursing woman should start to fast on the minor fast days, and then if she's feeling weak, she can break her fast, or with the lechatchila she needn't fast at all. So the general halacha, most poskim will tell you, that we're lenient in this regard for the minor fast days. I follow the opinion of the Aruch HaShulchan that pregnant and nursing women don't fast on the minor fast days. On Tisha B'Av, we're machmir, and we say they should follow the position of the Mishnah Berurah and fast until they feel, you know, weak or ill. And in Yom Kippur, in Malasot, in Yom Kippur, you have to fast, unless it's a case of Pikuach Nefesh, unless it's a case of life or death, which includes the life, of course, of the unborn. Yes. So now the Gemara says, we left off mid-sentence. V'shani hocha de'ika sha'ot de'lele de'lo kibel la mikara. So, even if Rav Huna holds that there is such a thing as a Ta'anit Sha'ot, in this case, there is no Ta'anit Sha'ot, the guy that slept, the Rip Van Winkle guy. Why? Because he never had an acceptance of a fast. A day and a half earlier, he accepted his fast. Sunday night, he accepts his fast. For Monday, he's going to be fasting. Monday afternoon, he falls asleep and only wakes up on Tuesday. Tuesday morning, he gets up, he goes to shul, he realizes he's still fasting, right? Even though there is such a thing as a Ta'anit Sha'ot, he is not in the middle of a Ta'anit Sha'ot.
He just forgot to eat. Not eating is not the same as fasting, because what was lacking? Delo kibel alei mi'ikara. He didn't have an acceptance of the fast. When on Sunday night, on Sunday afternoon at Mincha, when he said, tomorrow I'm going to be fasting, that was for Monday. The fact that on Tuesday he was still fasting doesn't ipso facto retroactively turn it into a fast. Right? The fast that he accepted upon himself ended on Monday evening. The fact that he was still not eating doesn't mean that he is still fasting. This is David's question. On Sunday afternoon at Mincha, what if, you know, it happens, people have yard site 2 days in a row, right? It can happen. It can happen. Two people, you know, you lose, not even the same year. It happens it's not exactly the same. My mother lost both of her parents 2 days apart, meaning the yard sites are 1 day on, 1 day off, 1 day on. But not the same year, 20 years apart. My grandmother died almost exactly on the yard site of my grandfather. So let's say you have two yard sites in a row. You have two yard site coming up on Monday and Tuesday. So on Sunday afternoon at Mincha, can you do your Kabbalat Ta'anit that I'm going to fast tomorrow, and then I'm also going to fast the next day, obviously with the night in between being able to eat and drink? In which case, if he woke up on Tuesday morning without having eaten in between, well, then he really has to fast. I mean, in this case already, it's almost pikuach nefesh, fasting for 2 days. He could probably get out of it. But en achinami, on Tuesday morning, he would still be in the fast because he had a Kabbalah in advance. Now the Gemara tells an interesting story. Mar Ukva ikle le Ginzak. And Mar Ukva goes to a place called Ginza. I'm not sure where Ginzak is. David, you have the Steinsaltz?
No, just the Safaria version, but I can look up where it is.
Oh, anyway, so he goes to that place. They asked him, boi mine, I've told you many times, means they asked him an information question. They had all types of questions. They had three questions for him. As it must have been a place without any chachamim. So a great rabbi, Mar Ukva, one of the Amoroyim, shows up and they start asking him all their shailas. Right? It must have been a town of Misnagdim. Must have been a town of Litvaks. Ginzak must be in Lithuania someplace. Agnon has a story about two brothers, a Chosin and a Misnagid, and they're arguing about Mashiach Zeiten, when Mashiach will come. So about when Mashiach turns up, obviously Mashiach's going to turn up, he's going to show up in our little shtetl someplace. So where's he going to go to Davin? Is Mashiach going to go to the Beis Medrash of the Misnagdim, or is he going to go to the Klois of the Chassidim? So the chassid says to his brother, he's certainly going to come to us. Because if he shows up in your Beit Midrash, you're going to dray him a cup. You're going to drive him crazy. Right? Mashiach, he came all the way from Rome riding on a donkey. Right? He's tired. He's hungry. He's going to walk into the Beis Midrash and you're going to ask him about this Tosfos. And you're going to ask him about that kasha and about this teku and that problem that was left unresolved. If he comes to the klois, to the chassidim, we'll give him a lachayim, we'll give him a piece of fish, we'll give him a piece of kugel. Tell me, where do you think Mashiach's going to want to go first, to you or to me? So here, David posted where Ganzak is. Where is it, David?
Northwestern Iran.
So he gets the Ganzak, which is like not a place of yeshivas. And they have shailas. They have shailas. They want to know, like, what's it? So they ask him, mitanin l'shaot or ein mitanin l'shaot? Right? Is there such a thing as tanit shaot or isn't there tanit shaot? Lo hava biyade. And it wasn't in his hands to answer. I mean, he didn't know the answer. Kan kanin shel nochrin asurin o mutarin. If you have wine vessels, Rashi says clay cheris. You have clay jugs that you store wine in, and it held the wine of non-Jews. Does it make the vessel not kosher? Does it prohibit it to use that jug? Or isn't it prohibited to use that jug once it's been emptied of the non-Jewish wine? V'lo haya b'yadei, and he didn't know the answer. And the third question, b'mash shimesh Moshe kol shivat yimei hamiluim. What was Moshe wearing during the 7 days of the inauguration of the Mishkan? And when the Mishkan was constructed, we're reading now the parashiyot of the Mishkan. So when the Mishkan was constructed, for the first 7 days, Moshe functioned in place of the Kohen Gadol. Before his brother Aharon took over the job, Moshe did a kind of like dry run of the Mishkan for 7 days, offering all the korbanot. So what did he wear the Bigdei Kahuna? Did he wear the Bigdei Kohen Gadol? Or did he wear regular clothing or something else? Below Ayah B'Yadeh. And he didn't have the answer. These were the three questions that the Anshei Ginzak had when the Chacham entered town. So what does he do? So first of all, it's a big Muslim. Mar Ukva was a significant Amora. This is not Stam, a guy who walked into town. He's a significant Amora, and the Gemara is not embarrassed to tell us that, and Mar Ukva was not embarrassed to admit, there were questions to which he did not have the answers. So what does he do? As important as the fact that he admitted that he didn't know the answer is what comes next. Azel v'shoel b'midrasha. He understood that it was his responsibility to obtain the answers. That's the mark of a rabbi. A rabbi doesn't have to know all the answers to all the questions, but he has to get the answers. He has to understand it's his responsibility. That if somebody asks you a question, it's your responsibility to find the answer. Azal v'shal b'midrasha. Amru le hilchata mit'anin l'sha'ot. The halacha is, there is such a thing as ta'anit sha'ot, u'mitpalalin tfilat ta'anit. And when you are in the middle of a ta'anit sha'ot, you recite onenu. Ve'ilchata kan kanin shel nochrim la'achar shnei masar chodesh mutarim. After 12 months of these clay jugs not being used, they become permitted for use with kosher wine. Because we assume that whatever bli'ah there was into the walls of the jug, whatever absorption of non-kosher wine into the walls of the jug, after 12 months, it becomes null and void. And you can then use these jugs again. U'bamash shimesh Moshe kol shivat yimei hamiluim b'chaluk lavan. He didn't wear the bigadim of the Kohen Gadol. Neither did he wear the bigadim of a Kohen Hediot. He wore a white frock. Rabbi Kahana matne b'chaluk lavan she'ein lo imra. It was a white frock that had no hem or anything around the bottom of this chaluk lavan. Shel pishtan asui l'shem kach, Rashi says, he wore, it was a linen, what's the right, not a frock, a linen robe that was made a special for this occasion of Moshe serving in the Mikdash. Of kahana matne, ki hailishna b'chaluk lavan she'en bo imra,
Imra, Rashi says safa, right? It had no hem around the bottom. I'm not sure what the symbolism or significance of that is. This question about what Moshe wore during those 7 days is tied up with what was Moshe's status during that time. So Rashi, this Gemara, this topic is discussed elsewhere in Shas and Masechet Avodah Zarah. So Rashi in Masechet Avodah Zarah says that Moshe couldn't have worn the Bigde Kuhuna during the Shivat Yemei Miluim because there's a halacha that the Bigde Kuhuna can only be worn by Kohanim. Moshe was not a Kohen. But Moshe was not just a regular person. As Moshe is the only non-Kohen to perform this activity before the Kohanim themselves are inaugurated into their tasks. But since Take, he's not a Kohen, he can't wear the Bigde Kohuna. That's what Rashi says. But Tosfot Masechet Avodah Zarah says that Moshe could have worn the Bigde Kohuna because Moshe had a status as a Kohen. As Tosfos felt that the Kohanim were Moshe and Aharon and all of Aharon's descendants. Right? But in the generation of Moshe and Aharon both had the status or the privileges of Kehuna in terms of working in the Mishkan, but that only Aharon's line inherits the Kuhuna from him, and Moshe's did not. So for certain purposes, Moshe was a Kohen, and therefore he could, Tosfos says, Moshe could have worn the Bigdei Kuhuna during the Shivat Yemei Miluim. Others say, obviously Moshe wore Bigdei Kehuna. The question is only, did Moshe during the Shivat Yemei Miluim, did he have the status of a Kohen Hediot, or did he have the status of Kohen Gadol? Meaning, did he wear the 4 Bigadim of a regular Kohen, or all 8 Bigadim of the Kohen Gadol? I want to go back a second. On the topic of the Tanit Sha'ot, what time is it? It's late. So there's this Ritva here on our Gemara, which I'll just paraphrase. The Ritva, this is relevant to what Ben asked. The Ritva says that that a fast. A person who accepts upon himself a fast does so with the force of a neder, right? When a person says, tomorrow I have yahrzeit, I'm gonna fast. So that's a kind of personal neder that he accepts for himself. And through the force of that neder, he turns all the food and drink in the world for that period of time into something which is prohibited. That's what a neder is. You take something which is usually allowed, and through the force of your vow, you make it prohibited. So if that's true, so then obviously there's such a thing as a ta'anit shot, right? Just as I can take a neder for anything, I take a neder, I'll never wear anything blue, right? I can take a neder that says I won't eat until 11 o'clock in the morning. I won't eat until 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So the question is, is that a neder just like any other neder? I won't drink milk. I won't wear anything blue. I won't talk to so-and-so. Or does it transform that period of not eating into a ta'anit? Meaning
again, there's not eating, and there's ta'anit. What's the purpose of a ta'anit? A ta'anit is milashon inui, that you subject yourself to affliction, because we think that a certain amount of affliction from time to time can actually be a trigger to tshuva and to self-examination and repentance and all of those things that a ta'anit is meant to accomplish. So can that be done? Can you do that? Can you take upon yourself that element of ta'anit for a period less than dawn to dusk? But I can take a neder that says I won't eat in the next 2 minutes. And if 2 minutes passes, I've fulfilled my neder. And if I eat during that 120 seconds, I violated my neder with the accompanying prohibition. But nobody thinks that a 2 minute fast leads to tshuva, tefillah, tzedakah, to introspection, to self-improvement, right? It was just a rather meaningless neder. So that's the question. Is a ta'anit sha'ot a worthy deed in and of itself, like other ta'aniot, or is it merely just, another neder? And the nafka meaning would be, is if you can transform even a certain period of time into a ta'anit, so then you say anenu. But if not, so then you don't. A person can take a neder, right, that they're not going to eat solid food all day long. But they'll drink. Right? That obviously is not, you know, that's what physicians call fasting. You know, like when you have to be batsom before you have a medical procedure, you're allowed to drink. On the contrary, they tell you it's good to drink. But that doesn't make it a tzom with a capital tzadi. It doesn't make it a ta'anit, right? It's you're refraining from eating for technical purposes. So one would not say anenu in such a case. Okay. Anyway, that's the topic. Well, the Gemara goes on. We're going to come back to this topic of ta'anit sha'ot next week. Okay. I guess we'll end there.